Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. Alright, so thermodynamics, it's, sort of wanted to talk about it, but it relates to so much stuff in terms of talking about the history and identifying a proper model of how energy exists in the universe, what the nature of motion is. It ends up being too big a subject for me to have consolidated into some perfect little, this is the idea I want to emphasize. So this is just a draft video. I was listening to a Wolf of Ram video on the subject and realized he made three different blog posts on the same subject, essentially, one talking about his history of thinking about thermodynamics, I suppose, and then it's more specifically the second law of thermodynamics, which apparently just says something as simple as heat moves from hot things to cold things, and not from cold things to hot things. So you could almost turn that into the pressure argument, which is you can't migrate a pressure of 50 pounds into an environment of 60 pounds. Obviously, the 60 pounds is going to consume the 50 pounds, and they'll merge into 55 pounds, that kind of thing. So it doesn't seem like a very complex idea. I mean, as an axiom, it seems pretty safe to say it's like a fire. You know, it's not going to reverse, spontaneously, where you can trigger it simply, the chain reaction, but you can't take all of the gases and all of the crap that the fire creates and somehow expect that if you just threw that stuff into space, that somehow it would reverse itself and recreate a piece of wood. That kind of stuff. I mean, it gets to the whole idea of whether the universe is running out of energy. And whether or not that has something to do with entropy, or whether it has something to do with some idea that the universe isn't a closed system, and that somehow it can leak its energy, I would always understand that, was able to conceive of the idea of a photon leaving a sun and never hitting anything, and therefore it would leave the universe. Leave the active universe, and therefore the universe has to be losing energy because the photon isn't coming back, therefore it's not staying in the system, and the system has to get colder. But then you can fix that by just figuring out that, it is a bubble, and it just reflects back into the universe. Problem solved, so to speak. And then if the universe was infinite, that is, the idea of this stuff was everywhere, then you could just argue that the fact is there's so much stuff between us and the infinite end of the universe that no photon could go forever without hitting something. And so it's inevitably going to get knocked back into the system. And so whatever, it's like an insulator. The thickness of the insulator is so thick that whatever you have on the inside can't ever get to the outside. Those are all, those are almost directions that are too complicated. So, I will go back to something simpler in terms of the history. So, he was sort of arguing the history in the video, which was interesting, the early history. But once you get into the later history, the history of the 1800s, it just became an argument about mathematical theorems. And I would argue all of those are tainted by the fact that they don't have a rational understanding of energy in the first place. The whole mv squared thing, if you use it in your formulations, in my opinion, are just going to just mess up the thermodynamics, because you have more energy going one way, going from heavy things to light things. you end up with more energy than you started with, by their theory, and vice versa. If you go from the little bits making something big moving, you somehow lost a bunch of energy, and that doesn't make any sense. So, so this relates to the Newton's third law thing, which I just wish, you know, I mean, I can't change anything, so I can only argue why it's not exactly right. Okay, so it says something like, you know, for every action, there's some sort of opposite reaction. Okay, and they don't explain where this opposite reaction, what it is. And my argument is that you can understand that there's no opposite reaction that doesn't come from a direct implication of the action itself. So, I would argue there's three ways to understand what happens to motion. Now, this is the one that gets, the first one is the one that gets to thermodynamics. That is, you have motion and you're a big object. So your motion is made out of, you could argue, a bunch of pennies. So you could just think of it as the universe is made out of a currency. You know, you got the cent, you got maybe a dime, and then you got the dollar bill. In terms of recognizing the components, the size of different things. Things can be of different sizes. And in this size, they can be, well, this dime can be representing 10 of these. You know, and this can represent 100, 10 of these and 100 of that. In terms of, the fact is it does carry this stuff called energy. So you can have something that, you know, 16-pound bowling ball, okay, versus an 8-pound bowling ball, and you can give them, you know, an 8 velocity and a 16 velocity, and the argument would be this is the same configuration. It's the same amount of money. You've just changed the, whether you have it in the form of dimes or dollar bills. So anyway, and what's happening with everything? So you have a thing that's a decent size, and it has a velocity, and the velocity is just representing how many dimes or pennies it has. So it has a certain number. So let's reduce it all to just pennies. And so everything's just represented by how many pennies it has. And everything else is just an amount of pennies. And that's what I would argue the universe is made out of, is the elemental penny. So every arrow in a direction has a bunch of little arrows it's made out of. So you have a pretty big mass. The argument is that mass, it's not, I wouldn't bother with the, that your mass somehow represents an amount of energy explicitly, because every circumstance where we're saying how many pennies do you have in this direction versus how many pennies you have in that direction or that direction. In most cases, you're talking about the pennies you have in a certain direction, and relativity says, yes, you could be living on a in a world that's spinning or moving the opposite direction, and so you don't have really pennies. You have a different number relative to the thing you're existing in. The environment's moving one way, then obviously what you think you have is different than what you actually have. But something has an actual value. So, you know, I don't want to... See, everything has to be in a context where people already have some notion of understanding that, you know, arguments about the fact that we can't understand whether we're moving through space collectively, and that I have relative motion to the things that are collectively doing that motion. We're all in the same area, we're being affected by the same forces, gravity's affecting us the same way, the sun, all this stuff is affecting us all the same way, but we can have motion relative to each other, okay, that can be inconsistent. And the fact is that when this pen moves forward, it might be that it has less energy, not more energy. And that I actually have more energy than it has because, you know, I'm making it change how much total energy it has. Let's see, that, you know, just messes everything up, but, you know, it is a fact that you have to deal with. Well, anyway, so for the sake of argument, we're just going to forget about the relativity stuff, and we're just going to identify things as having something. And the fact is they're just going to exchange it. So this thing could hit this surface, and in making contact with the surface, it's just like two steel balls in a Newton's cradle or some other kind of thing, it's going to make contact and it's going to basically give away its energy to the ground. So little pennies that are in this are basically going to be extracted to affect the ground. So in the Newtonian sense, all right, there's no equal and opposite reaction. There's just you having pennies and you losing them. So as you lose them, you lose your velocity. So when you're here, you're going to have velocity that much. And when you're here, you'd have a tiny little velocity area, and then eventually you stop moving. I guess I should have kept them all the same size, but whatever. It's all so tedious. Anyway, so this is Newton's third law in the sense of friction is a demonstration of it. But the equal and opposite reaction is obviously there's no opposite reaction. There's just you possessing energy and you giving it away to the environment. So when an airplane flies, it gives away energy to the air molecules it's moving, okay, and compressing and irritating, however you want to describe it. So you can just find places where there's no opposite reaction. There's just the action. You bang into things, contact them. Through the contact, you give them a portion of your energy. And that's all there is to it. There's nothing else happening. You're just giving away motion in a direction, all right, until you don't have any. And so that's one way of understanding Newton's third law, is just to understand it that the object gives away its energy. Therefore, it doesn't have it anymore, but there's no opposite reaction, and there's certainly no opposite reaction in the sense that you losing energy isn't an opposite reaction. Nobody took it from you. You essentially gave it and it went somewhere. All right, the other one would be, say you have a place that's under pressure, okay, something that's pressurized, and you poke a hole in it, okay? The simple fact is, okay, you poke a hole in this direction, you're going to start losing everything that's moving that way. So anything moving this way towards the hole is going to go out the hole, and that means you lost it again as energy. But you only lost in this direction. You didn't lose in any other direction, so everything else is still bouncing around in all kinds of directions. So understand it's going this way, and it bounces this way, and it bounces this way, bounces this way, and eventually it's going to bounce that way. And when it bounces that way, it's going out the hole. And so again, you lost energy in only one direction. Anything going this way, you lose. Okay, and so slowly but surely, you'll lose all of your energy in this direction. So energy doesn't have a direction in the sense the direction can always be changed. So you can change its direction for free. And you're just saying if the mechanism has a capacity to do that changing of its direction, which like a sealed steel ball would have, then eventually everything will find the hole and go out the hole, and this will stop moving because there won't be any pressure in any direction. And certainly there won't be any pressure in this direction, okay, because every time something went in this direction, it would end up leaving as energy. So yes, this goes this way, but there's no opposite reaction in the sense that you're just letting go of everything this way, all right? So the opposite reaction, again, isn't something new. It isn't some new force. It isn't some new event. It's just the process of you getting rid of this, which means inside of you, you had before an equality in these two directions, and now you're just giving away this direction, which means now you have to go that way because there's lots of stuff hitting this wall and not so much stuff hitting this wall. So yeah, the vessel's going to move that way. And the third would be the classic explosion. So you have something pressurized, and instead of making a hole, it just breaks in all directions. You know, it shoots crap in all directions. So this would be like the dynamite or the explosive example, where all you're doing is expanding something. So whether it's a single atom, where you know you combine hydrogens with an oxygens, well, it's H2O, so two of those, And this somehow makes a bigger molecule than the independent, the ones by themselves. So you've increased the size of a molecule, let's just say. So you've taken something that's this size and you've made it this size by doing some chemistry and creating a new arrangement for the electrons and the protons that you could argue is expanded. And by doing that expansion, it expands in all directions. And that expansion in all directions is, you know, going to cause this molecule to bang into other molecules, to bang into other molecules, and to cause all of them to start expanding or pushing in a direction. And so basically you're creating the same thing as the whole. You're just pushing all of the energy in all directions. And so you wouldn't call it an equal and opposite reaction, because the fact is that you're going to see the explosion basically from one perspective. So yeah, you standing here, you're only seeing the part of the explosion that comes this way. And you're saying this action is somehow, there's this equal and opposite reaction, but the opposite reaction is the fact that the explosion was in both directions. So it started off with both action and reaction, in the sense that the explosion created energy this way and energy that way. So there was no creation of an opposite force to counter the first force, because it created both forces when it happened. So the bullet and the gun example, you don't need an opposite reaction. The gun isn't an opposite reaction to the bullet. Oh, I can't see that. It's just the inevitable consequence. So I draw it over here. You can't say that the bullet and the gun are doing equal and opposite reactions, in the sense that one didn't cause the other. They were both caused by the same event, and the gun's going that way because it's seeing the explosion from that perspective, and the bullet's going that way because it's collecting pennies from that direction, from the explosion, because they're forced, you know, by circumstances to obey those rules. All right, so that's, I guess, where I'm saying it starts, is understanding that all there is the initial energy. All you have are the pennies, and you can smash a bunch of pennies into one thing going in one direction, or you can have a bunch of pennies that can go in any direction, and that obviously one is going to dissipate energy differently than the other is going to dissipate it, but you're really just saying follow the pennies. Everything starts with a certain amount of currency, a certain amount of capacity, things that move, and you're just saying which way are they going to move, which is important, to seeing them. So I guess when I redraw, I mean, the point will be is that the original understanding of energy was, it was missing the understanding, even though they were hinting at it, like Huygens and Leibniz and Newton. They all hinted at the fact that heat, okay, was really just an expression of the energy's conversion into smaller bits and smaller bits moving with a velocity. So you would take the velocity of a big thing and convert it into the velocity of little tiny things. So they were certainly on the right track that heat was work. Heat was the same thing as the thing you wanted. You wanted a certain motion out of something. You wanted something to go from here to there. Well, in creating that circumstance, you have to recognize that, yeah, there's going to be a bunch of this scattering stuff. Stuff is going to be breaking off, and you're going to lose some of the energy to the environment. But the energy isn't lost in the sense it isn't destroyed in any way. It's just now in the environment. And it will eventually, okay, can eventually be reconsolidated into an object and then explode again. So the argument is that, yes, you can supernova and spread a bunch of energy into little tiny places. But the fact is that that energy isn't dead. It's still in the environment, still doing work. So the bullet does work. The gun does work. You had an explosion. All of the energy of the explosion is going to go somewhere and do something. It's going to heat the gun. Obviously, it's going to heat the air. It's going to shoot a bunch of smoke and crap out. All of that's part of the energy it had that is now banged into things and been distorted and changed and carbonized, and it's done stuff to elements, and all of this other stuff has happened. And all of those processes were just as real as the process that moved the bullet. So the bullet's the only thing, part of the energy you wanted is the bullet's motion, but you're going to get a bunch of other stuff with it, because it's not possible to push bullets at high velocities without losing some of the energy to the environment. And so everything, so this all happened, okay, this discussion of thermodynamics in the context of steam engines. And the fact is that you're trying to make them more and more efficient, because, you know, when they start off, you're, for every bit of fuel you put in terms of, you know, calculating how much motion you get out of the wheels, you know, so you burn coal or you burn wood, and what you're trying to do is get all of that burning or all of that heat to convert into the motion of the wheels. And there's a practical end to, you know, how efficiently you can do that. But the fact is they were starting so inefficient that it was easy to make little improvements here and there, okay, that would, you know, put some of the energy back into the heat engine to keep, to not lose it to the environment. Things, simple things you could do, like insulate the pressure vessels and do different things to keep the heat where you want it to go, rather than have it get dissipated or lost or expended in forms you didn't want it to go. I mean, you can argue that all the smoke going out the smokestack is a loss of energy, and that all the steam that comes out of the pistons is a loss of useful energy. So what you want to do is make it so seamless that it doesn't make any noise and it doesn't shoot any gases and it doesn't do, because you've taken every bit of motion and converted it into the one thing you want, rather than all the other things that it's leaking into the environment through. So that became the subject of thermodynamics. And then that came the subject of entropy, which is the idea that, yes, it only goes in one direction, and that somehow, okay, it all wants to get chaotic. That is, it all wants to go into some sort of penny state. You know, and that all the pennies don't want to coalesce, or some kind of argument like that. And then obviously the counter argument would be is that there's a built into the environment we exist in is other forces that will undo that effect. And you would argue that gravity is one of those forces that are taking energy, and, you know, you would assume it's energy from the real universe and pushing it back into forms that can, again, move, that are high pressure, which is high concentrations of heat. So you're really just looking for some mechanism to recreate pockets of heat that, again, those pockets of heat can then, you know, leak back into the environment and do work. So you can only do work when you're going from hot to cold or from high pressure to low pressure, and then you're looking for a mechanism that would be creating the high pressure, and obviously gravity is creating pressure. So I mean, it's kind of obvious. yeah, it's obvious. I think it's obvious. Obviously something like a black hole would be an insane amount of pressure if there were black holes, but don't want to really argue that in this video. All right, so I'll take a break and clean up and see if I can put this in more concise language, the point I'm attempting to make, which is, yes, the history was doing okay, and a lot of this stuff was starting off okay. I mean, the Descartesian statement that, look, it's all circular. Something moves. The movement isn't ever used up. It's just converted into a form we can't use. That's all. I mean, the water wheel turns, we turn a belt, we make some work happen. But the fact is all of that is just the process of converting it into a friction, so to speak. And the energy's still there, it's just in this diluted form, and we can't do anything with the diluted substance. So it's almost like, you know, refining, you know, where you take ore from the ground and then you pull out just the gold or just the silver or just the something that's useful. It's the fact is it goes into a form where you can't, you know, you can't practically access it without using energy to force the energy into the funnel that you want it to go back in straight lines again. So it's kind of, you could argue the energy's in lines, you can use it, but when it's broken into a bunch of little tiny pieces, you can't use it. So a currency analogy. It would take more work, say if I threw a bunch of pennies into the yard, it would take more energy. If I had to use pennies for every foot I traveled, it would take more energy, more money, to pay somebody to go get the pennies than it would to, than the pennies are worth. I can't collect the energy without doing more work to extract it than I get back by extracting it. Going collecting the pennies, I'll have to use more pennies to collect the pennies. I have to use more energy to collect the pennies than the energy I'm going to get by trying to collect them from the environment. Something like that. Alright, I'm back. It really is difficult to explain all of this. Alright, so the idea is that energy can be in this form, and then it can be and we could call that a dime moving in a direction. And the idea is that the universe wants to break it into the pennies. Okay, that's what it. The universe's real state of equilibrium would be to have all the pennies separate from each other, and in no way being connected into a group. Okay, that's anti. Entropy. Okay, this is not the natural state, this is the natural state. And then you have to explain for some reason why it's getting into this state. And I would argue that the only way you can understand that is to be able to model the system the way it actually works. So the point is that the universe has these big clumps in it, like planets and suns and other things, and they're sort of anti-entropy. And so you have to come up with an explanation for why they exist, okay? In the sense that they are the complex thing versus it's supposed to be in this natural spread out state, free. So obviously gravity would be an explanation, but gravity doesn't provide enough of an explanation in the sense that gravity can tell you, like, say if I take a box full of little bits of BBs moving in all directions that bounce off the walls with the same energy they hit the wall with, blah, blah, blah. So the pressure of the box is consistent, but the stuff is moving all over the place. And I put two non-moving big things in there. Over time, the two big things will migrate into each other and, gravitate. But they won't in any way have any capacity to ungravitate once they're stuck together. There's nothing that creates any circumstance that allows them to ever come apart again. They'll just stay stuck together. because you can explain how they're shielding each other from pressure, and once they're connected, they just become a whole object that will move around forever without ever doing anything other than that. And so, let's just get real. I mean, so this conversation about that circumstance was interesting back in the 1700s, but it got very uninteresting in the 1900s because of Einstein's relativity. His gravity theories that basically made gravity a non-force. And, just some sort of bent geodesic, whatever that would be. And so something that couldn't go back into the environment. You couldn't take whatever it was the bent geodesic was doing one way and create anything that would take the energy that was used to push things together and then take that energy and allow things to push out. There was no explanation. So I would argue that where their models are defeated in terms of explaining why the universe isn't doing what they say it should be doing, which is, you know, theoretically. So they're saying in the future it's going to die a heat death. But, you know, why didn't it do it already in the past? Or, you know, why? Oh, that just seems kind of a lucky circumstance. We just happened to be invented at the right time. It seems more likely that the universe has some other mechanism, okay, that's a check to our balance to that. But anyway, who cares? It's not getting to that, those philosophical questions. All right, so my argument is that you have to understand that, yes, gravity is a simple thing in terms of just describing that why there's more pressure on the outside than there is pressure on the inside because of this simple shadowing effect of a force that's pushing. And obviously the whole argument about push versus pull, that should have been over in the 1600s. Pulls are really hard to imagine, an elemental pull, where it's really, short of some sort of ESP power or something, where an elemental push is really easy. Something bangs into something and exchanges its energy, so that one's really easy. Exchanges through contact are really easy to understand. Exchanges through some sort of telepathy, that's reaching. Much farther than your arm can reach. Anyway, alright, so then we're getting sort of to the strong force, because the strong force, okay, the force, that's inside of things that get stuck together, the fact is it has a lot of potential to explosively fly apart again. And so that would be the argument, that the material stuff is essentially hot. It's not cold, it's hot. So it's representing a place where there is heat, and the heat can, go back into the environment and heat the environment. Okay, so the environment is cold, the matter is hot. So the more energy in the universe that's in the form of matter clumped, the colder the universe is and the hotter the objects are. And the heat is in the form of this idea that protons inside of atoms are closer to each other than any kind of reason would say was possible. So we understand them to be in a circumstance where effectively they're radiating, okay, something, okay, and what they're radiating repels each other. So they're radiating a force. The force hits the other object, it reflects off of it, hits this one, reflects off of it. The idea is like a ping pong ball between two paddles. There's this pressure that increases the closer they get to each other. So the closer they get to each other, the more times the energy pushes on them. So the more pushes there are. So the closer they get, the ping pong ball bounces back and forth quicker, it exchanges energy quicker, more times between the two objects, you could argue, and they're inevitably pushed apart by the fact that any proximity they have to each other is always a repulsive pressure. And the electrons are doing the same thing. So the electrons are likewise repelling each other. But the trick is that the proton and the electrons have this inverse relationship where when you put the electron and the proton in proximity, there is no pressure between them because they're transparent to each other's force. So this red stuff just goes straight through and this brown stuff just goes straight through. And so they're not collecting any pressure. They're not making any extra pressure. So they're attracted to each other because the external pressure of stuff hitting them, okay, and the fact that no brown can ever hit this way, because any brown that goes into this comes out red. So that's a key ingredient. Any brown that goes in comes out red. So this just radiates red. This just radiates brown. And there's that inverse relationship. Well, the trick is that inverse relationships allows you to create just a very simple circumstance where you put an electron between two protons. That didn't work. All right, you put an electron between two protons, and what you'll end up with is like any radiation from this proton goes into the electron, is converted into radiation that's benign to the other proton and goes right through it. So there's no pressure on the inside between the two protons. They're not allowed to hate each other anymore. They can't see each other effectively. They can't be repelled by each other. So you've created this very unnatural circumstance where two things that would be creating a huge amount of pressure pushing back on the universe can't produce any pressure pushing back. And so you could also do the inverse, where you put a proton between two electrons, theoretically. And you'd have the inverse circumstance, and the electrons would get much closer to each other than they could possibly get. So anyway, so that's the source of the pushback. So as the universe breaks big things into little things, supernovas, whatnot, this charge circumstance enables the simple movement, the migration of things into each other, that is the attraction of the electron to the protons and the protons to the electrons. That attraction is creating the circumstance of creating higher pressure between, higher potential pressure between electrons and protons. By arranging them in these arrangements, okay, they are inert in the sense that their pressure is invisible until you extract this electron. Okay, so once you extract the electron, then the pressure between them is gigantic, and their motivation to move quickly away from each other will be intense, and so you're going to have a huge amount of stored energy, in the sense that it was stored by the electron obscuring. It's not negating the energy, it's just allowing the energy to be transparent. It's allowing objects to be transparent to energy that they would be opaque to. And so once you change the positions, simply change the positions of these objects, the whole thing explodes. So that's where you have the back to the Newtonian argument, okay, that you have this explosive pressure which allows this thing not to be, that is, you've compressed something and you've actually, in a sense, made it hot by making the heat that it possesses inert. So it isn't visible heat, it's invisible in the sense that it's, because of this arrangement, the heat is inert. It's can't do anything, but just merely change the position of the objects, and then the electrons will see the electrons and the protons will see the protons, and they'll run away from each other aggressively, be pushed away from each other aggressively. So without some kind of mechanism like that, yes, you could understand that the whole thing will just break into these little bits, and there's no way to make the little bits back into the clump. But see, the idea is you can make them back into a clump. And, you know, because the external environment can arrange electrons and protons. It will, just as a matter of probability or, you know, chance, push things into these arrangements. And once in the arrangement, it's solid and it'll stay in that arrangement. So suns are creating these kinds of objects in the nucleuses of helium. And these objects are durable and potentially explosive. Yeah, so in a sense, they can give back all the energy that was used to push them together. So the object is that the universe would just push stuff together, the stuff would just get clumped, and it would never be able to unclump. Well, the fact is it can't unclump because the clumps have built into them a simple mechanism where you just put in the key, you hit him in the right place, you knock this electron out of here, knock it out this way, for example, and the electron will go that way, and the two protons will now see each other, and boom. yeah. All right, so I'll pause and try to summarize that. I mean, the argument is you really can't talk about the thermodynamics if you don't understand first, you have to get the energy thing right and understand it's just momentum. So everything is, there's just a penny of momentum. So the elements of a photon, not the photon itself, but the stuff that makes up a photon, those elements are the same elements that make gravity, the same elements that make magnetism, same elements responsible for electricity. the same force. So the forces are all in the form of this elemental pennies worth of momentum. A tiny little quantum bit of momentum that's can be in patterns. And if it's in patterns, it can affect matter because it can hit electrons out of positions and create changes in the atomic structure. It can break the stability of an atom. So you can ionize an atom with a high frequency. You can't ionize the atom with a low frequency because you don't hit it the right way to break enough of it to cause it to unravel, fall apart in some way or other. Become something that can do something more complicated in terms of it's going to have to reattach to something else and cause some other chemical bond or whatever. It's going to cause a reaction in the chemical structure because you've done enough damage to it. And you can only do enough damage if you hit something, you know, repeatedly in a short period of time. You can't do the damage if you let it stabilize each time you destabilize it with a penny's worth of destabilization. So atoms are durable against pennies, but they're not durable if you put pennies together into clumps and then hit them with that energy. Then they'll break in some manner. But yeah, it all has to be understood as that quantity, and there's no mv squared thing. There's no concept that big things can somehow create more energy if they break into little things, or that little things, when they coalesce into a big thing, they become less energy. And that's what mv squared does. So you have to get that right, and then you have to understand that gravity is more complicated than just stuff being pushed into each other. It's complicated by the fact that what you're pushing together has the capacity to push back. And it's only because of its arrangement that it pushes together. If you had to push it together if the charges were all just positive charges, you can understand that it wouldn't matter about the pressure pushing them together, because the pressure pushing them apart would be much stronger. But you can negate the pressure pushing them apart by sticking, you know, an electron between two protons. So I guess, you know, thermodynamically, you really can't model it unless you break the model into more understanding. The fact is that charge does exist. Electrons and protons are the material bits in the soup of energy, and that the electrons and protons are being the things that are consolidating and being pushed together, and that you push them together one way, and you won't be able to push them together. You push them together taking advantage of arrangements, and you can push them together. But the trick is that if you break that arrangement, they'll explosively react. And so those are the cycles. So that's how the entropy doesn't consume the system, is because the fact is the little bits can be consolidated into matter in terms of its arrangement, and that arrangement is essentially storing the pressure that the little bits pushed the object with to put those into those positions. See, if you just move something, okay, I hit something and I move it and it stops. The fact that it stops means that something else took the energy. So if I hit something with energy and it moves, and it doesn't keep moving, well then something else took the energy. So the energy is back in the environment, it's not no longer in the object. So moving something doesn't require any energy, technically. It's just showing you that there's forces in the universe moving stuff. Right? Because something went from this position to this position. But the catch is, as I've sort of pointed out, is that what you're really changing, though, is the fact that, you know, when you did push the big thing, the energy you're using to push it, okay, isn't moving this the same speed as the energy was moving. Because it's pushing stuff, it's pushing more stuff than a single object. So it's going a much slower speed than it was going when the force that hit it. So it moves much slower, and it's that change in the amount of time that's the deficit created by moving an object. And essentially that's the same deficit. That means there's more pressure on the outside of the Earth than there is pressure on the inside. Well, there's obviously more pressure. I don't even want to get it. The inside of the Earth is very high pressure because you have a whole bunch of matter that's absorbed pressure to get there. It's all moving towards that inside, which is putting more and more pressure on the inside because you're pushing more and more things in the direction of the center of the Earth. There's more stuff theoretically, right, moving into the Earth than there is stuff moving out. And the only way you can have that break in equilibrium is that you have to be storing the energy on the inside of the Earth. And you're storing it as heat. Alright. So, yeah, well, maybe we'll just call that a video. Like I said, it's just draft. It's an interesting subject, but I guess what I'm arguing is it's only interesting when you're talking about the breakdown of energy and understanding how it goes from being in big things to being in small things. And the whole idea that I would argue that it's kind of clear that weight, pressure, heat, force, energy, they're all the same thing, momentum. There isn't anything else. And you're just calling things different things based on some sort of human utility. I mean, the very idea that work, the word, could mean something in this environment. It doesn't mean anything. It's all work in the sense it's all transfers of energy from one object to another object. And that's all you're doing is transferring it. It's not, you can't destroy it. You're just saying, what's it pushing? What's being pushed? And so when the force is just moving through the universe, it has no work. It's not doing any work because it's not moving any matter. And it's only when it's pushing matter that we might call it work. And then it's only work when it pushes matter the way we want the matter to move. So we want something to roll this way and to keep rolling, to keep moving. And what we have to appreciate is to get that work, we're going to lose some of the energy to moving things in the ground that we don't want to move. So it's just about what you're moving, where you're moving matter. So if you're pushing matter, you're doing work in the universe, and you're creating what would be called heat. You're realizing heat in the sense that you're making a piece of matter move with a velocity, which means it's stored force, and when it arrives somewhere, it's going to have that force and impose it on something else. So a meteor flies through space, it's not doing any work until it arrives on the Earth and starts pushing other pieces of matter. Yeah. So really, to model it, you first have to understand the currency. You know, that it is a universe of force that has all the energy, all the motion, and the matter is just pushed by the force. So it has to collect the force to move. Can't move until it's collected force. And that it has to collect the force in, I don't want to get into the whole direction rules, but yes, it can move in all three dimensions at the same time. It can have energy in all three, going in three different dimensional directions. But they'll create a movement that'll be one movement in one direction. One vector will be the net effect of those different pieces of force it collected. So it's really not that complicated, but it's all about how you explain it, right? So it's all about the arrangement of the words, all right, in terms of, but there shouldn't be that many words to use. There's force. The force is energy. The energy is pressure. The pressure is heat. The pressure is weight. And that stuff is conserved. It never dies. It just disappears from our view into places we can't see. So when you convert it, it's like we can see the dollar bill, but we can't see the pennies. So you can make the pennies really, really small, and the dollar bills really, really big. So we see it in the dollar bills, but we don't see it in the pennies. All right, something like that. So anyway, enough of an effort. Tired. It's allergies or something. I don't know what's, you know. I have a hard time keeping my eyes fully capable of appreciating the environment. Need a vitamin, I guess. Anyway, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. This has been a draftphysics.com video presentation. And such, and so forth, and whatnot.